We look at the background, the tech, and we felt it wasn't what we wanted. And when we looked at Collabora, we liked the tech, we liked the way there's a community, there's people that want to make something great together, and that has a true value behind it. Presti wouldn't be the same without Collabora, so when I learned earlier today that it might have not happened at some point if not given the right push, I was really glad to see it worked.
Welcome back to the Open Matters podcast, where we talk about open source matters that matter. Joining us today is Lucie Lesage from Jessie, a French company working around open source digital solutions and document management. We'll be finding out how they grew from a small startup to working with entire French departments and cities, and why they chose to integrate Collabora Online into their product, Presti. Lucie, welcome to the Open Matters podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about the business, I'd love to find out a little bit more about your background. In particular, I'm interested to hear, how did you first enter the open source world?
Well, funny thing is, my first computer when I was like 5, 10, was a Linux, because my brother, CEO at Jessie, was really into open source. So at home, we had a computer set on Linux and all the open source software that you could get at this time, because it was quite a while back. So my first touch with anything computer related was open source. Afterwards, I got introduced to the rest.
That's quite unusual. So you didn't start at all with Windows or Mac OS or any of that stuff?
No. And I knew at the time it was peculiar, because my brother kept reminding me we were on Linux, and I was afraid of the day he'll be moving out. And I didn't know how to make it work. It was a couple of years back, so.
And how did that, or did that, shape the way that you think about software today?
Yes, because when most people come to me and say, oh, I cannot move out of Microsoft because I've always used that and I don't know how to make it work, I say, I was working on Linux and LibreOffice and I got used to Microsoft, and it's actually a lot less cool and useful, and it's more lagging and stuff like that. So yeah, nowadays I don't fancy myself having a Microsoft computer. I went there and I gone back.
Well, that's a really fun background. And tell me a bit more then, what is Jessie, and what do you do as a company?
Jessie is a service company that where we make a product called Presti. It's an EDM, so electronic document management, that's based on a software that is relatively known, Alfresco, that was first and foremost the only EDM that were open source at the time it was created. But now we've decided to go another way and make our product based on Alfresco, but a tiny bit different, I guess.
And we were speaking earlier this week about topics and ideas, and it sounds like Jeremy actually started the company with a bit of a slightly different direction. Is that right?
Yes. So I wasn't there at the start of the company, but he had previous employments where he felt a bit dishonest with the way things were going. He wanted to make it more honest and make it look like IT is not as complicated as it looks like. It could be easy, it's just finding the right person to talk it to and to have it explained to you and to make it easy to use. So yeah, he wanted to make something more honest.
And clearly he was already quite committed to the sort of open source world at that point. I guess it wasn't new then.
He was, but he told me earlier that he didn't mean to make an open source company at first. He just wanted to make IT honest, and it aligned with the value of open source. Open source came a bit after that, when he tried to make a product and it decided to go somewhere, and it happened to be open source that was chosen because it was obvious to him.
That's really helpful. So would you describe yourself now as a product company rather than services? Is that fair to say?
Not really, because now we sell a product, but everything around the product is service. And when you make open source, in my opinion, you have to have something else, because, well, the code is free to use for everyone, so you have to add some value, and the value is all the services we can make around this software that we're making. So everyone can use it, but we would recommend you use our help to make it work even smoothly.
Yeah, that makes lots of sense. And I think that's how lots of open source companies operate, is by helping people get the most out of the software. So What was difficult about those early days then, when the company was first going? What was that like then? Do you know?
Before it was a big company. We were still a tiny one, but I think Jeremy was feeling a bit lonely, like missing having colleagues around and stuff. He had a lot of missions, so he had different colleagues on its mission, but it wasn't parent team, so he changed a lot. So he liked this kind of community around that you get at a company.
So what drove that change from this mainly sort of services thing to this now mix that you now have with more colleagues? What happened?
I think he wanted to make something more. At the time, he felt like he kept fixing some stuff on Alfresco, on other stuff, and it could be like industrialized. I don't know if that makes sense, but at this point, he figured it would be fun to have colleagues, and maybe they could start making a product around the services they make about Alfresco.
And that's about the time when you were joined, or when he was joined by Vincent, and then someone else, and then you joined the company. What was it like at that point?
So Vincent and Cindy joined in 2019, and like most people know, COVID hit right about then. And that changed a lot of things, because some clients were lost, because some budget were lost. And at the same time, Alfresco was bought out 2020, so around that date, by an American company. So they didn't really know where Alfresco was going to go. And well, that was where they were making the most of the services. That's when everything, I guess, changed.
Is it fair to say that COVID forced the company to change quite a lot? Was that something that you guys were keen to do, or was it forcing your hand?
Yes, well, it was still something on their mind, I guess. We could do something, we're thinking about it. And when COVID hit, well, you're 6 months alone at home, so you have to do something. And you had this idea, so why not try and make it true? And that's how Christie started, really, because, well, they had free time, best make the best out of it. And so that's when everything changed. So yeah, COVID forced it. It was an idea, it's just not like born by COVID, but it was an idea that was forced by COVID.
Some of us got super into making sourdough, and some of us made companies. That's and is that the point where you discovered Collabra Online? Is that right?
At first, it wasn't really Pristy as a project like you would know it now. At first, it was Alfresco packaged in a way that was easy to deploy. And I guess some other partner of you wanted to help a client make something between Collabora and Alfresco. They did not have the ability to do it on their company. So he asked Jeremy if he could do it. And that's why the first connector existed. And afterwards, it was, well, more easy for Jeremy and the team to make a connector with Collabora because they knew they could do it. I guess without that other partner, it would never have existed because it wouldn't have think it would be doable.
And did you look at alternatives?
It came a moment when, yes, maybe only office were considered, but pretty rapidly, looking at the licenses, so it's not really open source, and the technology wasn't really to our liking, I guess. I'm not technical, but I know it's based on some Microsoft code composing stuff, which is not the choices that Collabora made. So we didn't really look at the software on the office. We looked at the background, the tech, and we felt it wasn't like what we wanted. And when we looked at Collabora, well, that's the opposite. We like the tech, we like the way there's a community, there's people that want to make something great together, and that has a true value behind it.
We're pleased you joined the team. I know that we have a number of people who listen who are perhaps in quite similar positions, writing code on their own and doing more individual products. What was that transition like from a single developer to many and to working with a larger team?
I think what was difficult at first for Jeremy, because I wasn't there and I do not code anything, was to accept to write a code, to let someone else write code. And he said something earlier that was really like on point, I guess. It's like if you're writing a book, it's your story, and you have multiple authors coming and voicing their way into the story. Well, that was the hard part for him to accept. It's to rely on other people, and they're gonna write differently than yours, and they're not gonna respect exactly the same rules. And that's what, I guess, the hard part of the transition.
And what was it like then pitching this new idea or this new development to potential customers?
At first, it was kind of awkward because we went into that during COVID. So it was on our own money. So it was not finished when we first pitched it. And it's open source, so there were no like investment from anyone. We had to prove it can be done before it was really sold, but we needed money for the project to be born. At the beginning, it felt awkward pitching it because we knew it was not finished and as good as it could be. It was lacking a few key components and features that for us, as we are the first user of the software, felt like a big lack. But we had to make it look like it was perfect in a way, because we needed those people to believe in the project. So it wasn't easy at first.
And are you open and honest about that? I mean, I wouldn't accuse you of being deceitful, but how does that relationship work when you are pitching and selling something that is perhaps not quite there?
At the time, because now it's way more finished than it were on the first pitch, of course. But at the time, we were honest. We told people, well, it's a work in progress. We know it lacks a couple of things. If you want those, like, ask them, and we'll try to put it in the roadmap. Or if it's really something that you're gonna miss, we're gonna put it forward because we need like your feedback. But we rely on honesty, because a client with whom you're honest, even if is waiting on something, or even if he doesn't get exactly what he was thinking, but you know it's coming, and you're telling him, yeah, it's coming, it's 2 months, 6 months, maybe a year, but it's coming, well, he's reassured because you're keeping him in the loop. You're not like being dishonest, you're being like forward with where it's going.
And so do you still have some early adopter clients who were on amazing pricing from back in those days, or how did that work?
We do have some clients that are still on a price that we should not sell this, because we are losing money selling it to them, but we honor our pricing, so they're on that.
And presumably that's quite difficult as well when you're bringing a new thing to the market, to work out what is a sensible price.
It's really difficult because you need to know what is the right price to give confidence to the client that this is something, because if you're too cheap, then it's not going to be giving confidence in the product. He's going to think, well, if it's this cheap, it must not work, or there's something hidden in there. But if you're too high a price, then it's not really finished, or it doesn't look really finished, or anything like that, well, he's not going to buy it. And if you don't buy it, well, we don't have money and we can keep going at doing that. So at first, I think we were too cheap. So people was lacking that kind of confidence. So we up our prices a bit. If we had made more sales, well, it would have worked at that price. But since it was too cheap, clients were not coming and it was like not a good cycle.
So how did you find these early customers? Were you just knocking on the doors of Paris and saying, hello, do you need help with Alfresco, or where did they come from?
I think we were already there for Alfresco help. So we were known because Alfresco has been something my colleagues have been doing since version 2. I guess today it's version 7 plus 2, because they switched the way they make the version, but it's version 10 or somewhat. So she's been at it for quite some time, and Alfresco is not an easy tech to understand, so that's like give credibility to us and to the way we can be reliable when answering a client and delivering what we have promised we would deliver. So we could go there and think, yes, it's a new project, but we have the background and you can rely on us to make sure it works with your Alfresco. And our first client was the city of Alès. It's in the south of France. We're still client today. They already had an Alfresco with another partner, so we weren't gonna be able to sell Alfresco to them. But they could buy Presti on its own. They are the only client we have that has this type of installation, where they just have Presti. They don't have the alfresco background with us. This is with completely different person. So that's our first client on Pristy. And I think they bought it because they believed in it. They believed in what it could become. And they took the risk. And now I think they're happy on it because we're still clients.
And that's the really great thing about open standards and open software, isn't it? That they can take that risk because these things should interoperate together.
Yes, and if we would not have made it through, they could have used what we had done and keep using it today. Because it was not dependent on us, really. If we were not there today, they could still be using Pristy as it was and make it evolve on their own or with other providers.
So how have things gone since there? How are things growing? I'm sure you can't share all of your customers with us, but who are some people who are using you now?
At the moment, our two biggest clients on Pristy, the Département du Gard, they've been investing a lot on our side Pristys, specifically for administration in France. They've been giving a lot of money to make Pristy useful for them specifically. And lately, thanks to what we have been doing with Le Département du Gard, we've signed Eurométropole de Strasbourg, which is changing politically to go full open source when they were on Microsoft a lot. They wanted a new EDM, and they wanted it to be a free software. Like free, not in the free term where you get it for free, but libre, like in Flos. Because they felt like if they were to buy something, they wanted all of the cities and metropole and all other French entities to be able to use the same thing. They don't just want something for them, they want something for all of France. So for the part of EDM that we do, because I know they are also using Nextcloud and other software, because, well, they have a lot of needs, they chose us because we were open source, and they chose to believe in us and in our project to make it go a step further.
You raised something there that I'm curious, because English is very difficult, because we have one word for free, and in French, of course, you have two. Does that make the conversation a little bit easier in terms of explaining what you mean by free, as in freedom, libre, not gratuit?
Yes and no. It's better understood because we go with libre, we never say free. And even though the language in French is most straightforward because we use freedom, at the same time, some see the community of open source as free, and it's still there. And we had some clients over the course of the time say, oh, you're too expensive for a free software. So it's helping for sure, but it could be better.
we have problems with the English language. We need more French speakers to help us out and to explain what freedom is and that software does not grow on trees. So did this open source free freedom idea, does that help you win customers, or is it a hindrance? Does it make things harder?
I think it helped us sell sooner than it would have been if we wouldn't have an open source software. We could rely on the community, we could rely on recommendation, we could rely on the fact that if we would not have survived, I don't know, COVID or whatever, well, it was open source, so they had the source, so they could make it work all the way. So that helped us sell sooner. And regarding if it's easier or not, there's two types of customers that we have. There's the one who wants open source, like Eurométropole de Strasbourg. So it's easier to sell to them because our selling point is we are open source. We do a good product, but it is open source. And, well, that's one check on the to-do list on what do we look into a software. And there's the other type of customers who don't care whether it's open source, whether it's hosted in French, whether they just want something that works. Also, they see sometimes open source as a risk, because it's maybe smaller companies. So if they go with us and not with Microsoft and something goes wrong, they could like have a blowback because, oh, you should have gone with Microsoft is really easy to say at some point. You shouldn't have trusted that small company because you know open source, it doesn't work. So that's second type. You have to convince them that open source can be good because there's a community, because if we go under, well, you haven't lost everything that you've been working on. But at the same time, you have to really rely on your product. And when it's not finished, like it was at the beginning, it's really hard to sell a product that's not finished when you're competing with products that are finished. Now that we're closer to what other competition are doing, it's much more easier for us to go and say, we do the exact same thing and we are open source. But some people say, oh, what is open source? And some people say, okay, good. And they really don't care.
So talking about open source or not, when we were talking earlier this week, you mentioned some changes to the way that Alfresco and Nuxio are being run. With these movements in these ecosystems, are you finding customers being more cautious or more curious, perhaps?
I guess there's a bit of both. Alfresco is not moving forward. I can't speak for Nuxio, but for a bigger backstory, Island, it's an American company that bought Alfresco in 2020 and Nuxio in 2021. And Alfresco and Nuxio were the two EDM that were open source in the European market. When they bought two EDM at the same time, people were cautious. Like, if you buy twice the same thing, well, maybe you're not gonna keep them both in the long term. So people were already cautious. And what we can see, Alfresco is not moving forward much. For lots of customers, it's starting to seem obsolete or hard to maintain. And we have a lot of people, when we say, oh, it's based on Alfresco, oh, then I don't want anything to do with you because it hasn't been working for quite some time.
Should we be looking forward to a Jesse complete EDM solution soon then?
Well, Presti is a complete EDM and we are compatible to Alfresco. So it's already there, I'd say. But if you have Alfresco, you can also use Presti to have an enhanced Alfresco with a different point of view and with new features that are open source.
So tell me a little bit more about your involvement in the company and what has surprised you about running marketing in Jesse.
Well, there's a thing that I wasn't aware when I was starting to work at Presti that would be the same, is I have a degree in cinema. I don't have anything to do with IT at first. Yes, I was on Linux when I was a kid, but afterwards, well, I went another way. At some point, I was looking in a job and my brother was looking to hire. And he say, hey, I've seen you work in cinema. I think the job you've been making is the same as the one I would like to offer you. And I was like, I was working on movies and you're telling me I can be doing the same thing in IT. I don't believe you. But I trusted him because I really wanted to move forwards with my life and he really needed someone. So I went there. And yes, when it comes to it, I'm doing the same job. I'm just doing it for IT rather than a movie. But that surprised me a lot.
Maybe slightly less glamorous, less Cannes Film Festival.
Yes. Definitely a lot less like celebrities and stuff, but at the same time, we're making something to make the world move forwards also. Like a movie can like inspire people, but you use a software every day, you know? The other thing that Jeremy was thinking when I asked him this question is, wasn't expecting when starting Presti, is the shared envy that we would have about the product. We were thinking of making something and now we just want to use Presti. And that the feedback we've been having a lot, and there's a community around it in the team. We are a small team, but we want the project to grow because we're using it and we want it to be better for us. And I think you have the same thing at Collabora. You like the product you're making, so you have a sense of purpose when you come to work because you want to promote something that you trust in a project. And I think Jeremy didn't expect Presti to become this type of product too, the type of product you believe in the project, so you want to give it all to make the project go forwards. That's a nice surprise too.
Absolutely. You do get invested in it. It's not just an arbitrary thing that's out there, but it's part of your own workflows. And
yeah, and when you go on some shows and stuff and you talk to people and they don't show this envy for their product sometimes. When you talk to people that works to other company and they say, oh yeah, I'm making this, but I don't think it's really easy to use or I would like to use it every day or stuff like that. We do have that for Presti or Collabora and I think we're lucky in that sense.
You said envy. I think I might say a sort of a jealousy for your own product and that you're using it internally. Is that also true of the other toolings you're using? Are you fully open source throughout the company or what do your workflows look like?
We want this consistency. So if we're going to promote open source, make open source software. We're going to use open source software or French software because we're French first. It's not like we're going to use open source at all costs, because if a software doesn't work in open source or doesn't exist in open source, well, it just doesn't exist. So we're not going to invent everything or just use it because it's open source. We're going to use it because it works. But as a company, everything we develop is based on open source, so there's not like an hidden proprietary software somewhere. And if ever there was, because there were not alternative, we would sell it way forward to our clients. Like, hey, this thing you want, we cannot make it open source. So if you want it, we're gonna go to a partner that make it proprietary. It's not easy to say in English. We're gonna make it with a partner that's gonna make it proprietary. So you should know forwards, and if that's okay with you, we're gonna go forward. But it's never a choice we wanna make first. For example, every marketing design we have, it's based on Andro. I guess you know it too. Like those little design that are made and they create fun. So we decided to like pay the Andro Plus because it would like help that girl that is making all those fun things go forward. So that's little bit of thing we can make to make sure that we're consistent in our way of thinking. We just don't do it for like because it's a la mode. We do it because we believe it's important, so we want to support the community.
That's awesome. Is that something that's reflected in your sort of data storage? Do you know where everything is, where the bleep bleep bloop bloop happens? And
well, most of what we do is hosted in France or in Europe by default. If we sell a SaaS offer, we're going to host it in either OVH, Scaleway or Elsner, depending on the need. We make sure to not, when you have a software, it runs somewhere and after you have to make a backup. And it's recommended not to make everything in the same basket. So we are always favor having like OVH in France and Elsner in Germany. But we're going to make sure our data is somewhere in Europe by default. And if there's no other solution or some solution are open source but based in the US, well, we're going to know and we're going to disclose it to our clients. And we're going to know and try to make it better in the future.
Just before we draw to a close then, I'm really curious, what's the future looking like for you at Jesse? At the moment, you've got PrestiEspace, which is your EDM. But I understand you've got some other fun things in the pipeline as well.
Yes, in the roadmap at the moment, we have two big projects. I'm not going to go into features specifically. We have a project called PrestiMarché, which is really specific to the French market, but maybe sometime it could be adapted to the European market. We don't know. It's when a government wants to buy something in France, it has to be a call for tenders, and it creates a lot of documents. It takes sometimes over a year to prepare. You have to consult a lot of people, and it goes to one place, to another software, to another software, to another software, and all the software create documents. And at some point, you want to be able to get it in one place, and that's what PrestiMarché is about, is gathering all those files from all those different software, making them have the same type of name, the same type of tree, the same kind of tree where everything is stored, and be easy to archive at the end, because we have rules about archiving things. So this whole process, we're making it, we started the first version with Département du Gard, and now we're making this new version with l'Eurométropole de Strasbourg. So we're trying to do something that works for everyone. It's not easy. And the other thing we're working on, it's really a side project that we believe in. It's called PrestiMédia Diffusion. It's basically a digital asset management software that we would plug at the end of the EDM. It's really more for companies. It's the way you would manage your digital asset, because we're in a time where everything is digital, but it's not always easy to like store your photos or store your PDFs or store your documentation. So it would be some tool that comes with your EDM to be plugged in and like make your document go somewhere else again and have other way to store it.
That sounds really cool. We like ways to share documents and to help other people to work together collaboratively. Well, that's been super interesting. I've really enjoyed hearing from you guys. You're a super valued and wonderful collaborative online partner. We love working with you very much, and we wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you. Yeah. We hope to keep doing lots of great things with Collabora, because it's a really great software to have in Presti. Presti wouldn't be the same without Collabora. So when I learned earlier today that it might have not happened at some point if not given the right push, I was really glad to see it worked eventually.
Great. Well, we're pleased with the people doing the pushing. Good stuff. Lovely talking with you, Lucy. Thank you for joining us.